Welcome to the Tom and Curly Show. I'm Tom Tangney, and yes, John is still on vacation. He promises to return next week, at least sometime next week. So, who's on the guest host carousel this morning? You know, let's review this week. We've had Danny O'Neill. We've had Andrew Walsh. We've had Felix Spinell. Who's next?
You throw this ball through the hoop.
Big sigh of relief. None other than Danny O'Neill, once again from 710 ESPN, the Danny, Dave, and Moore Show.
Back by unpopular demand.
That's right.
More blue state left-leaning liberal talk.
It was whoever was available. And Danny, I guess you got the short straw. Well, Danny, you know, it's Blue Friday. But it's a Blue Friday for a different reason. The Seahawks are not playing this weekend, and that really frosts me. So color me blue. But the one thing, the one advantage of having no playoff game to focus on with the Seahawks, that does at least allow us to concentrate on even bigger local news. What the heck are we going to do when the viaduct goes away, which will happen officially tonight at 10 p.m.?
Do the same thing we did last time, right? We're going to complain about it. We're going to worry about it. There will be marginal delays that are pushed around to all other parts of the city. If you're living in West Seattle, you're screwed, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty much what it is. That's coming from someone who lived in West Seattle for 10 years. I would say the start of this construction project spurred me to move. By spurred me to move, it means that my wife declared we are not going to live over here while the project's going on. We barely missed the deadline with the first closure.
Yeah.
That would have been back in 2011. We were a month away from moving them, but we moved to Capitol Hill. We now live in Eastlake. So Of all the different people that are worried about this, I don't think the viaduct closure is going to impact my 4-block walk to work.
Okay. So if it doesn't impact Danny O'Neill, then we don't have to worry about it.
No, we do, because I want to hear how bad it is going to be for everybody, because Carmageddon or Viadoom, all the different handles that we come up, these things stink.
Yeah.
Our region doesn't handle traffic well in the most ideal circumstances,
right.
Let alone if it rains, let alone if we tear down a double-decker highway that's been there for years. What if it rains while that highway is being torn down? We might all cease to exist.
Well, I don't know anybody who's been on the airwaves more than our next guest. Do we even call him that? But we need to hear about him of all days. This is the day we need to hear from him the most.
Rock! She's my cherry pie. Who'd think it was such a sweet surprise? Tastes so
that's
good.
Right. Chris Sullivan.
This is my Super Bowl.
Yes.
Does it feel like that?
No, what it feels like, Danny, is, you know, I don't know. I'm pumped up because I'm excited next week to see what people do. Because I'm excited to see if they've taken our heed. And I'm excited to see where they go. What is the traffic shift going to look like? And I'm also excited to help people out. That being said, I know it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough. So I'm kind of dreading the impact this is going to have on our listeners and our region. Because I hate it when they're stuck. Because that really sucks. Because I hate being stuck in traffic. And I know they do too. So kind of mixed feelings about it. But
yeah.
I'm ready to go. I'm locked in, baby.
Okay. So I guess, first off, in fact, I want to start philosophically. Yesterday, Andrew Walsh and I were talking a bit about the nostalgia that we feel for the viaduct. Now that it's going away, I approve of what's happening. I think the tunnel is a fine idea. I think it'll be great. It'll open up the waterfront. But are there twinges of nostalgia for you, Chris, as a traffic guy right now facing Viadoom? Is there a twinge of regret right now?
No, I mean, okay. I'm gonna miss driving the viaduct, the northbound, you know, on those certain summer days where you do it, when someone first comes to Seattle, there are a couple places you go,
Yes. And
you can drive them down the viaduct going in the north, and you get that beautiful view over Elliott Bay, and I'm going to miss that. In fact, I'm going to drive it once we wrap up here this morning one more time.
You are perfect.
Just to do it, and, you know,
but it's a beautiful highway.
Oh, it's a gorgeous drive, but I know it's not safe. If we have a significant earthquake, it's going to come down, or it could, and, you know, that concerns me. And so, and since since we spent all this money and wasted all this time, yeah, the extra 3 years, let's not forget how far behind we are on this thing. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to drive the tunnel as well, though I dread that a little bit. I've been inside of it, and there's some, I mean, you're going down significantly once you get through that, and there's some turns in there, you know, gradual, obviously. I'm worried that drivers are going to be like, what? It's like, at a point, wow. It feels like you're in a submarine going hard down, especially going north out of the stadiums. When you go down, it's like, you go down. Okay. I'm like, you better, let's watch our speeds in that. But I'm excited to drive.
I'm imagining it's like Space Mountain. I'm so pumped for the tunnel.
Except it's not dark.
Yeah.
But you get the idea. It's like Space Mountain when the lights are on. But yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to driving it.
Okay.
But I'm expecting people to run into each other as they get used to it.
All right. This is going to be on behalf of a couple of the guys I work with. If you live on the east side and you commute to not going anywhere toward the downtown core or Soto, how's this going to impact you if you live on the east side?
Well, I've been telling people this is like a Blue Angels practice day. It's like that Friday Blue Angels practice day where, because I-5 is our primary commuting route or the primary alternate to that 99 corridor, I'm expecting the downtown core to be really, really crushed. And that always backs up onto the eastbound Lake Bridges. It just does. And so I'm expecting I-90 to take it. I'm expecting 520 to take it. I'm even expecting people who don't want to do that. Say for instance, they're driving to, you know, they're going to Olympia, and they normally, you know, go across the Lake Bridges. I don't know why they would, maybe because they don't like driving 405. Don't even bother with it. Just go, if you're coming down 90, just bang a left on 405 south and don't look back. Because this does have the ability to create a ripple that is region-wide. And so, yeah, that, it's going to impact them, not as significantly, certainly, as the daily I-5 drivers. But, yeah, I expect this to impact 90, 405, at 520 as well, even in some significant way.
And will it impact the people driving from the north-south any differently than people driving from the south to the north?
No. You know, it's funny. We're so locked by our geography. I mean, darn Green Lake and Lake Union,
yeah.
Because we don't have any other way. There are so few north-south avenues. The thing we don't understand yet about the drive out of the north end, say, I don't know if all the people who use 99 now through the city, do they live in Shoreline? Do they live in the south end of Shoreline? Do they live in Northgate? And if they do, how far down 99 are they going to go before they get onto I-5? So if you're a driver from Everett who's coming down daily, all of a sudden are you going to see a lot more merging at 175th than you do every day? Or is it going to be all the way down at Northgate? So we don't know when they're going to come to I-5, yeah. or if they're going to go all the way down. And one thing that has kind of been under the radar throughout this, you could still use the Battery Street Tunnel. During this Alaskan Way Viaduct closure, you can still get on and off 99 at Western.
Okay.
That's a thing that's been under the radar, though I will say that last little bit of getting off at Western, if a lot of people do that, that's going to back up 99 to the Aurora Bridge, probably.
Yeah, okay. And just to clarify, that means you can go through the tunnel and you will exit almost immediately.
Almost immediately at the south end of the tunnel. Correct.
Yeah.
But that is a little bit for, you know, so when people think it's closing, they're thinking of the tunnel constrictions. It's like, no, you can actually go a little bit further south. But yeah, that's not something I would recommend, but it's also something that if a lot of people are realizing, of course now they are, I've let the cat out of the bag, that is an option for you.
All right, Chris. This is the time where we get all of the alternatives of, hey, here's what you can do. I saw the Seattle Times, David Gutman had... Sure. He had a guide today of like, well, there's a great bus system. If you're going to use one form of public transportation, you got the water taxi, you've got buses. What's the best alternative if you want to take yourself off the road?
Well, you know, the one thing, obviously, you know, it's a shame that the light rail doesn't go anywhere further past the U district. But what I would recommend, say if you're in the south end, you're a south end driver, if you get up early enough, and I mean super early, to drive to Angle Lake, say you're coming from Auburn and you get over, you drive up I-5, get off and hit Angle Lake and get on light rail at the southernmost terminal, not only will those trains be empty, but you will also be able to take a light rail trip all the way and bypass I-5. That's something I would do. But the problem is I had some people test run that this week, and they got to the lot like at 7, and it was already full. There are only 1,200 spaces there, so it's Lord of the Flies to get a spot there. But that's something you could consider. Sounder Train is also a very viable option, and there are spaces available. Up at MyNorthwest.com, we had put up a map of what trains each time of day have some capacity usually. Check it out. Maybe that might work for you.
Okay, so Chris, a lot of people may be changing their behaviors, their commuting behaviors, come Monday morning. And one of the suggestions is that there will be people that will use this as an excuse to finally nudge them on to public ends it, which I've been obviously a big advocate for decades now. The one concern I have is that this is going to be a pain in the neck for regular bus commuters, and then other people are going to try the bus. Hey, you know what? Maybe I should try this. Award-winning King County Metro bus system will say, wow, this is more convenient than it normally is, and that's not even a fair reflection of what a normal bus ride is. What can you tell us about the people that are normally riding the bus? What do they have to look forward to or fear? What should they be fearful of? And then what about these newbies who've never gotten on a bus? What kind of advice can you give them to ease their commute?
We'll get to the newbies in a minute, other than to say, if you're on the number 70, make sure you look for the elderly statesmanly gentleman wearing Under Armour sweats with somewhat of a limp, who is you, and ask him about movies.
That's
we'll
right.
We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, you're going to have a lot more friends over the next 3 weeks. And we were talking to the head of Metro earlier this week, Bill Bryant, and basically it comes down to the fact that he's saying, if you're used to catching a certain bus, you might want to catch one 30 minutes earlier or be prepared that the bus that you normally get might be full. And so you might have to wait a couple of buses. He says you should budget 30 to 60 minutes prepare for the crush of newbies or other people that are trying transit. Because it's not unheard of that your bus might be full and you might have to wait. That's why they've got buses on standby. They've got 20 buses on standby. Those ones are primarily going to be focused on the West Seattle folks because they're going to take the brunt of this because they have so few ways to go, as you guys have talked about. So they have standby buses out there. They're going to do their best for light rail or if you're using express buses or whatever those, they're going to pack as many trains as they can. They can't add train cars because they don't have any to add to light rail. The new ones they're getting won't be here till later this year. So my advice to regular transit riders who are there today is just be ready that there might be a lot more extra people. And a lot of those people are going to be noobs and they're going to frustrate you. Don't hit the guy in the back of the head who's fumbling around and pulling out credit cards and trying to figure out which one's his Orca card that he just bought and is trying to figure out how this dang thing works.
Yeah.
And if you're a new transit rider too, read the damn website at Metro Transit or Sound Transit and figure out the do's and don'ts. They've got great sections there that will give you a little heads up on, okay, don't do this, do this. You need exact change if you're not going to use an Orca card.
That's right.
And it's $2.75 or whatever. You better have that. Don't be fumbling. Here's where you get on and off each side of the train where you are. For Lord's sake, practice at least mentally over this weekend so you're not causing a problem on the platforms or the street where you're getting in Tom's way when he needs to get to the station.
Can I give one piece of advice? If you're riding a bus and you're going to start using the bus, buy an Orca card.
Without question.
Buy an Orca card because, first of all, you don't have to worry about change then. You also don't have to ask for the stupid transfer, which chances are you're never going to use. Like, it becomes your pass. Buy an Orca card. Yeah. It's available
pretty much everywhere.
Go get an Orca card.
Yeah, and practice pulling it out and tapping it. I mean, just do something. Be ready.
But remember, if you don't have an Orca card, my hunch is a lot of people aren't going to realize, if they're trying to use the bus, they're not going to realize they could have used an Orca card until after Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, or after the first week.
That's what this weekend is for.
It's true, but you can still get on the bus. If you have
completely. You can do it without an Orca card.
You have a lot of dollar bills and a lot of quarters, and you'll be able to get on. But yeah, keep in mind, you will be slowing people down quite significantly.
Oh, completely.
And how early? So, drive time. We think of drive time, is that like 6 to 9?
you obviously don't live in Pierce County.
Yes.
With the folks on 167 who are fighting it out at 5 a.m. already. Yeah.
Okay, well, fair enough. I'm just wondering, so if you're taking, so like I catch a bus like before 6 o'clock in the morning, will that be impacted or is it more closer to like the 7 o'clock? When he says get to the bus stop an hour and 30 minutes an hour early, that is like,
That's for people in West Seattle.
Yeah,
okay. If you're in the main part of the city,
I mean, a
bus or two early.
You should be fine. I mean, considering the time of day that you're going. I mean, okay. I get that. But, you know, the thing is we're not really sure how this is going to play out because we don't have there are 90,000 vehicles a day that use the viaduct. We don't know what every single one of those people are going to do or not do. So until we kind of get a flow, one thing I can tell you is this week, I think I started seeing a lot of people trying, at least from the south end, their new commute time, because the drive from, say, the middle of Boeing Field into downtown started backing up at about 6:15. That normally doesn't happen until about 7:30. It's usually much worse from Federal Way to South Center than it is South Center to Seattle that time of day. But I think a lot of people from West Seattle are going around the south end, going by the airport on 518 and popping up through South Center. And we've started to see that this week, that was starting a little bit earlier. Same could be said for Airport Way and 4th and, you know, 99, at least up towards the West Seattle Bridge. So I think a lot of people have started trying that. So that's what we can prepare for, is at least an hour earlier start to our commute. And it'll probably last about an hour longer as people maybe try to wait for some of it to go. Maybe they're used to going at 7:30. They might go at 9 now to try to off shift a little bit. So we'll see earlier and later.
Will there be different impacts on the morning as opposed to the afternoon commute?
Yeah. And again, okay. Because there always are. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. And then if you throw into the mix in the afternoon, say there's something going on at Seattle Center or down by the stadium, say a concert or a convention kind of a thing where people use that 99 as a way to get out. Now all of them are going to be on Mercer. Those generally happen in the evenings as opposed to the morning. So I would say, you know, it's going to impact them both regularly. You would expect them both probably equally, unless there are events,
night events,
things that could complicate matters.
Gotcha. Chris, I know that one thing they've done, I believe the barrels are gone from I-90
that
to Merger.
That is correct.
Did Curly pay you your $5,000?
No, I have not gotten my $5,000 as of yet. I'm assuming that's what he's been doing on this long vacation, is working enough that he can make $5,000. He needs like 3 weeks to make $5,000, right? That's what he gets paid at these things.
And
are you
worried this is the end of the transportation crisis, right? This is once this is done, everything's going to be good. Might not even have a job. Traffic's going to be great, right?
Wait for that tunnel to open and then wait for the tolls to go on it come May or June. We'll see a shift in our traffic patterns forever.
Okay, fantastic. Chris Sullivan, always the best. And he's been on our station more than anybody in the last, for the last week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. My hunch is that he'll double his appearances on all the shows throughout Cairo starting on Monday.
How would you describe his attitude? Impact. Because he's not looking forward to it, but he's completely keyed up and he's ready to go. It seems like it's like the official on the day of the Super Bowl. Like, I'm ready to do this.
Amped up is good. I think I haven't seen – he's higher than a kite right now, and I mean naturally. I mean, I think the anticipation is really what's, sort of floating his boat, and good for him. We all are going to be better off because of Chris Sullivan's reports.
All right, Tom. All right. There's no Seahawks this weekend.
Oh, my God. That just kills me.
The Patriots are going to be playing at home, so it's the same old story in the playoffs. And actually, that's literally true. We'll explain why that applies to the San Diego-New England game. That's coming up next in our playoff preview on Tom and Curly.
This hour, the 9 a.m. hour of the Tom and Curly Show is brought to you by Laura's Home Loans. Laura's Home Loans is proud to be bringing you this hour, this Friday hour of the Tom and Curly Show. I'm Tom Tangney. John Curly is away on vacation. Danny O'Neill filling in. This time a week ago, I thought for sure that we would be gearing up right now for a Behind Enemy Line segment. I didn't know at the time that we would be playing the LA Rams, those Seahawks, but that's what would have happened if only we'd beaten those hated Dallas Cowboys. It's not happening. I've got to say, I'm still not really in shock because I knew it was a possibility, but I'm really bummed that we do not have any Behind Enemy Lines at this point, and it's just I'm having a hard time dealing with that. So we're going to take advantage of Danny O'Neill's expertise when it comes to pro football or anything else, being the Seahawk insider that he is. But to put us all in a better mood before we start discussing the playoffs, I want to play a clip. This is a clip that Danny pointed out to me, and I think if we hear it, we'll feel infinitely better than we do right now. It happens to be Russell Wilson. He's mic'd up right before the Dallas game, and this is what it sounded like.
Little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Hey, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Woo! Let's go get it, baby. Let's go do it. Come on. That was the Baptist version. That was the Southern Baptist version right there.
That was Russell Wilson.
That is Russell Wilson singing to himself or to his teammates right before the game. What's the context of this?
He's getting pumped up before the game, getting enthused, showing a different side of his personality. That was as endearing as Russell's ever been, yeah, wasn't he?
Exactly. It was. We all think that he's too robotic, that everything sounds like he's been practicing it, you know, for weeks, you know, in advance, what he was going to say, the same kind of earnest pablum, I think it may be a legitimate way to say it. The fact, first off, the fact that he's loose enough to be singing, I like, and the fact that he sounds pretty darn good.
Yeah, actually, that's earnest pablum. That's going to be my latest phrase that I write down from Tom. What did you have earlier? Was it mountains of the mundane?
Oh yeah, the
profundity of the mundane.
Yes, and anachronistic.
Yeah, it was anachronistic.
Anachronistic, yeah. vulgarity, something like that.
That's correct.
I love the fact that you're a collector of phrases. But still, I mean, what are we to make of this? Is it show how loose he is, how professional he is, or is this pretty common? I don't hang around professional players like you do. Do they all kind of sing and, you know,
yes,
loosen up that way?
Okay. It's very common for guys to do goofy stuff on the sidelines.
Okay.
They've got a ton of energy that's going through them. I would not have identified Russell Wilson as one of the practitioners of that.
Is that right?
There's no sport that we get better access to on-field sound than the NFL.
Yeah.
And I think it's a large part of what has made the league as popular as it is.
Yeah.
That nobody does the mic'd up segments as good as the NFL does.
Yeah.
There was a play last year where Russell, he had a rushing touchdown against the Colts.
Uh-huh.
It was on a Sunday night game. And he ended up running forward, and he took a big hit at the goal line, and he got up and he cursed.
Is that right?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
I don't want to say the word that he said, but he said something, yeah! And I heard it. I was like, oh, that's awesome. And you combine that with the fact that earlier this season, it appeared that he threw an opponent's shoe toward the sideline.
Oh, yeah?
A player's shoe came off in the 49ers game, and Russell picked up the shoe and threw it toward the sideline, which I love, because it was like, here, why don't you go fetch this? But, Tom, we're going to have to make do with no Russell Wilson this weekend. We get no Russell.
I know, and that is so frustrating to me. I feel like, you know, I understand the idea of playoffs. I mean, everybody has to get knocked out, but it just feels like we had more football in us. But I can't imagine, you know, the one thing that puts my inhibitions is that at least I'm not Chicago. You know, Seattle's had decent runs in the playoffs in the last decade. Chicago, they've been there so seldom. They were, you know, they were the home team. They weren't one of the top two teams, but the third ranked team. They were playing a Philadelphia team that was the suspect, but seeming to get their act together. But I mean, they lost on a double clinked field goal at the end of the game.
It was hilarious.
So I mean, I feel their pain more than mine, but I just find it frustrating. But
who are you going to root for this weekend? Do you wait until you watch the games? Are you going to watch the games? I'm going to watch them all.
Oh, yeah.
I think I know who I'm rooting for.
Okay, well, I'm definitely not rooting for Dallas. Of all the teams, the team that would win the Super Bowl that would hurt me the most would be Dallas.
Why?
I can't stand Dallas. I've just grown up hating Dallas. I mean, it's a sports hate. It's nothing beyond that, but I've never liked Dallas. Again, when it was the Pittsburgh Steelers versus Dallas, I was always for the Pittsburgh Steelers. When it was the Green Bay against Dallas way back, you know, in the pre-Super Bowl era, I was always for Green Bay. I don't know if it has something to do with Texas or something, but I'm always opposed to Texas. That's why it's so fun to have Anna Scott in our building, because she's born and bred practically a Dallas Cowboy fan herself. But it's an irrational hatred. Right now, I can easily justify it because I can't stand the owner. I think he's the worst owner in professional sports.
So you're going to be rooting against Dallas when they go and play the Rams.
The LA Rams. The thing that kills me the most, though, is that I think we had a good chance. The Rams beat us twice this season, the Seahawks. Both times we were in the game. It's true. We lost both times. It's hard to beat a team three times. I think we are a solid enough team. We could have won. We could have knocked off LA in LA. It's not a home field advantage for all I can tell. But anyway, why don't you do a quick preview of the Dallas-Los Angeles Rams game for starters?
Well, Dallas has a defense who's the estimations, how people regard that defense, has increased significantly over the past month and a half.
Yes.
And now they're going up against there are three great offenses in the NFL this season. The Rams, the Saints, and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
None of them played last week. And I think that this weekend is going to be, in some ways, kind of a referendum on, is this a new era of NFL football?
Because of the high-powered offenses, they average 35, 40 points a game.
Disbelief, because typically the explanation is that those types of offenses are better suited for the regular season than they are later in the year.
Yeah.
That kind of high-flying team that running the ball and defense wins championships.
Yeah.
So this playoffs going forward is going to be a referendum on that. Dallas has a very good defense. They're going to be going up against an incredibly explosive offense in the Rams. The other game, and this would be the one, I'm rooting against the Philadelphia Eagles.
No!
That's correct. Oh,
okay, so I'm definitely rooting for Philly. In fact,
why?
I think I'd love
They just won.
They just won, but if they win again with the same backup quarterback, I think that really says a lot about how this team can come together. I love this idea that a no-name, I mean, Foles has been around, but he wasn't their starter. A second-string quarterback can bring a team to two Super Bowls. I love that idea. Also, Michael Bennett's on the team with Philadelphia. I like Philadelphia because they were a hard luck story until last year, we all counted them out. They had a win by hook and by crook to get into this game, and then they knocked off Chicago last week.
With a double doink.
Yeah, with a double doink. So I'm all for Philly. You are rooting against Philly. Why? Because they did
two reasons.
Last
the
year?
First one is I'm rooting against them because I don't want to hate Philadelphia. I generally like Philadelphia fans. Okay. If they win a second consecutive Super Bowl,
they'll become insufferable.
Yes, I don't want to hate Philadelphia fans. The second reason is quite simply in self-interest of yeah. I do not want them to advance to the NFC Championship game because wow. that will affirm the possibility that Seattle could have hosted it.
Oh, I know. That'll be the double burn. If Seattle and Philadelphia both made it to the final round, Philadelphia was the one team in the six teams that was lower ranked than Seattle. We could have hosted the game. Oh, I know. That would be a heartbreak.
That would be a tough pill to swallow. That would be brutal to swallow. So I'm rooting against them.
Okay.
In the other half of it, we have the oldest average age of starting quarterbacks in any playoff game in NFL history with 41-year-old Tom Brady. Starting against 37-year-old Philip Rivers in the AFC divisional playoff game. That game's going to be played in New England. I don't think it needs to be
said. Los Angeles Chargers.
We root against, I know that they're supposed to be the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah.
I think they're the San Diego Chargers. They're playing in a temporary home in a soccer stadium. They're not fully the Los Angeles Chargers yet. But the Chargers play in there against the Patriots, and we don't need to explain any reason why you root against New England, right?
Yeah.
Anybody that's not from New England cannot root for New England. They've got a jerk of a coach. Their quarterback has had so many great things happen into his life that into every life, a little rain must fall, Tom.
Except for Tom Brady.
He's got
right?
a supermodel wife. He's got an adorable family. He's incredibly this charismatic story of sixth round pick to perhaps greatest quarterback ever. I hope he gets, okay. They get absolutely bludgeoned.
Okay, so we're talking about your preferences. Do you like Philip Rivers?
I don't, but I've begun to root for him.
Okay,
I don't like him because he doesn't curse.
Yes. Well, he is. Is he religious?
I think it's partly religious.
Yeah.
And he's just got good manners.
He's got like 9 or 10. Another kid on the way. He's already got 9.
He's
going to
have a
kids.
Full
he's
football
a,
team.
He does.
He wears bolo ties. All of these things sort of chafe me personally.
Okay.
Where I don't like him. And I've generally thought I don't like the way his mouth moves. He talks a lot. And when you see like the way he talks, it's annoying. He looks like someone who needs to be punched square in his suck hole. Just a big punch right in there.
You know why I liked Philip Rivers and I've always rooted for him is because I hated what Eli Manning did to him, in effect. Manning was drafted by the San Diego Chargers. He said, I refuse to play in San Diego. Screw you. And so he forced the Giants to basically draft Philip Rivers. And I just felt like that's tough on Phil.
It's turned out okay for Philip Rivers.
Well, he hasn't made a Super Bowl, and Eli Manning's won two.
Made
so.
Like $120
okay,
million.
Okay, and then finally, got one quick last game. Kansas City versus Colts. Who are you rooting for?
Colts, because I want Kansas City's heart to break again.
No, I love the way Kansas City plays. I don't think their defense is good enough to win the Super Bowl, but I'd love for them to make it. Okay, so much for football. Behind Enemy Lines will resume next year.
Dang it. See, I wanted
Seahawks.
To do this.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we're doing to our own heads as Seahawks fans to get through the next week.
Flying tips? Well, one airline is encouraging that option for customers when it comes to the service they receive in their seats. Is it a sign of things to come on the airlines? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. John Curly away on vacation. Danny O'Neill dancing, clapping his hands, and about to burst into song.
Let's go.
We still have to track down. Apparently, you sang your theme song on Monday. We got to track that down. That would be hilarious.
I can guarantee you no one needs to hear me sing. My the O'Neill men famously cannot sing. In fact, my father's oldest brother, who was a priest, when we were I have 30-some cousins on that side of the family, good Irish Catholic family.
Uh-huh.
We used to go to his midnight mass to laugh at him singing.
See?
Okay. It was hilarious.
Well, the thing is, we're always up for a good laugh, so maybe that's why we need to track that down. Nonetheless, Danny O'Neill is filling in. By the way, please go ahead and text us the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973, the Online Trading Academy text line. Or you can always email us at the Northwest, mynorthwest.com inbox and let us know what you think. Are you going to be watching the playoff games? Are you so disgusted with the football that the pain of the Seahawks loss forces you to stay away so you don't suffer any more indignities? Let us know. This next story I think is actually interesting, and I had an immediate reaction that I was sort of embarrassed by or appalled by. And that the story is, should you tip your flight attendant? One airline is encouraging it. Apparently, Frontier Airlines, if you purchase something on the plane. So I know air travel has changed tremendously in the many decades I've been alive. And right now, the basic, like, you get nothing. You have to pay for anything you get except for maybe a couple of peanuts and maybe a little a sip of a Coke. The idea is that if you are on Frontier Airlines, if you are purchasing something, so this isn't the free stuff, the free coffee. If you're purchasing something, they are going to encourage you to tip by allowing you to fill out would you like to tip 15%, 20%, 25%? You can custom tip, or you have to mark, I don't feel like tipping today. So you have these various options. And there's some discussion in the industry. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? How to do it. And so when I first initially, Danny, do you have a question?
It's an interesting idea because I think that flight attendants, it's always been recognized, they are bringing you something to your seat.
It's true.
It's the actual function is similar to a server. Frontier Airlines is the one that started it because now most places, even if you buy something, you're not breaking out cash. It's entirely it's entirely card.
Yes. I don't even think they take cash. A lot of the airlines don't.
I know
take
Alaska
cash
Airlines does, which is the airline that I use. I know they don't, but it's got an option now, as many places do, even if you get just counter service, of how much do you tip?
Yeah. And I mean that raises the question, but what I'm embarrassed about, my initial reaction to this was, well, no, that's ridiculous. And then I realized that it is completely a cultural thing. If we are culturally trained not to think of tipping flight attendants, but at the same time, what do they do? What service do they provide that's any different than any kind of other service? I mean, it does make sense that this, you know, would be considered. However, the issue is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? And should they be doing it? Apparently, Frontier has been allowing for this for 3 years, but there's been a recent change, and that's why it's hitting the news. They've allowed for tips like this, but all the tips had to be pooled. Now they've decided they're going to allow the individual attendants, flight attendants, to keep whatever tips get. And the idea, the suspicion is, or the hope is, that this will improve service, that now they'll even be more accommodating. Now, I don't fly as often as John, but I feel like they're already overly generous. I have no problem with flight attendants. They give my stuff. I don't feel like they need to be encouraged.
Here's
to
Here's why it's
better.
Really happening. It's because airlines like Frontier and other places that are non-unionized airlines don't pay nearly as much for flight attendants.
Yes.
And this is a way to supplement their income. I'm going to ask the flight attendants in the next Alaska flight that if they would prefer tips. I've always generally brought chocolate. Do we need to do tips?